An Overview of the American Accent, taught by Sherry Summers. This lesson was recorded specifically for students of the American Accent course. Any reproduction of this audio in any form is strictly prohibited without the permission of AccentOnSpeaking.com.
Hi, and welcome back. In our last class, we talked about what accent is, specifically intonation, pronunciation, connecting words together, and voicing. In this class, I'm going to give you an overview of the American accent, more specifically, intonation, and a little bit on connecting words together. If you're like me, you want to know the big picture before you dig into the little nuances of the language. And if you're not like me and would rather dive into the nuances, this overview will help you have an idea of what's coming up, because we will be digging in to all the little pieces in the next lessons. I also want you to have this overview because as we go along, I'll bring things up and you'll have to have a little bit of an idea of what's going on so you can understand my explanation. There's one characteristic of American English that's different from a lot of other languages, and that is American English has three kinds of stress. Well, sometimes four, but mainly three kinds of stress. Some languages, such as Spanish, have just two kinds of stress, or two pitches. And speakers of languages with just two pitches tend to sound a little flat in American English. Some languages have tones, four or five tones, as in Chinese and some Southeastern Asian languages. When speakers of these languages speak American English, they tend to make a sing-songy sound. And that doesn't work very well in English either. So these three stresses, or three pitches, make the intonation. Think for a second, what does intonation mean? I-N-T-O-N-A-T-I-O-N. Intonation. T-O-N comes from the word tone. We talk about intonation or tone and pitch. Does that remind you of anything? If you're musically inclined, maybe that makes you think of music. And that is what we're talking about, the change of pitch in the music of the voice. How do we change our voice to show stress? There are three ways. One is to slow down. The other is to make it louder. And third, we do it by changing the pitch. That is, we actually squeeze the vocal cords to change the note. Like this. Like this. Notice how the tone of my voice went up. That's how we change the tone. And this is related to stress in English. So, three kinds of stress, what are they? We call them the primary stress, the secondary stress, and no, not the third stress, but the weak or reduced stress. We also have another kind of pitch, which goes up very high, or sometimes very low, and I'll tell you what that is in just a little bit. The sounds that you hear go up the most in English are called the primary stress. When we drew a diagram before of English and we saw those hills and we saw lower sounds and we saw valleys in English, it's the hills that are the primary stress. This is what you hear the most, the longest, the strongest, the highest. It changes pitch. It has more power. Every main word, and what I mean by main words are nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs, has a primary stress. These are the important words of English. These show the content and the action and describe the content and the action. So every major word, or what we call content words, have a primary stress, one syllable in the word is the strongest. But if the word has only one syllable, that is the primary stress. So if you look at the words that I have for you, listen. Can you hear which part, particularly which vowel is longer, stronger, higher? Listen. Apple. Apple. What has a stronger sound? You should hear the sound ah. Apple. Vacation. Vacation. What has the strongest sound here? You should hear the sound K, the CA. Vacation. Vacation. Elephant. Elephant. What has the strongest sound here? Elephant. It's the first E. It has the strongest, longest, highest pitch of the three syllables in this word. That's the primary stress. So again, every content word, every noun, verb, adjective, and adverb has a primary stress. All of the other words, such as prepositions, articles, conjunctions, have a primary stress when we say them slowly and clearly. But when we speak normally, we often don't say them slowly and clearly, so you may not hear any peaks or any high pitches, any primary stress in these kinds of words, and we'll talk a lot more about this as we go on. So every word has a primary stress. Some words have a secondary stress. The secondary stress is not as strong as the primary stress. It's spoken with a little bit lower pitch. It may be just a little bit faster, not a whole lot, but a little bit faster. And it's always pronounced with a real, pure vowel sound, not a reduced vowel sound that I'll tell you more about in just a moment. So listen to the words that you see on your paper. Donation. Donation. Nay is the primary stress. Do is the secondary stress. Do, nay, shin. Donation. And it's also a nice, pure O sound. Donation. Secondary stress. Vacation. Vacation. The C-A, K, is the longest and strongest. That's the primary stress. But the V-A is a secondary stress. The vowel is A, ve, vacation. Now, how about this word? California. 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 Can you hear where the primary stress is? That's at four. California. There's a secondary stress in this word. Ca, C-A in the beginning of the word. Ca, A is the vowel sound. It's a pure A sound. Ca-la-for-nya. California. So we have a secondary stress in California. That's C-A. You'll also see the secondary stress in compound nouns. That is when two nouns have been put together to make one new word or one new meaning, such as the word bedroom, bedroom. In a compound noun, the primary stress falls on the first word. The secondary stress falls on the second word. Bedroom. Room has the vowel oo, which is a pure sound. It's not reduced, but it is lower than the primary stress. Bedroom. Toothpaste. Two words have been put together, tooth and paste. Toothpaste has the primary stress on the first word, tooth, and paste is a secondary stress. basketball, basketball, basket. Basket is the first word. Ball is the second word. Ball is a secondary stress. Bass, the first part of basket, is the primary stress. So those are our first two kinds of stresses. The third kind of stress, sometimes we don't even call it a stress. Sometimes we call it a weak stress or unstressed, is when you look at the intonation and pattern of English and see those valleys. The ups are the primary stresses. The middle sounds are the secondary stresses. And where it drops down very low in the intonation diagram, you'll find the weak stress. And sometimes we'll refer to it as an unstressed syllable. Unstressed syllables are spoken very low and very short and very fast. Often the vowel, no matter what the vowel is, if it's in an unstressed syllable, is changed to a schwa. The schwa is a very short sound pronounced as and it can take the place of almost any vowel in English. Other vowels, especially vowels with long sounds, are often shortened. For example, the sound E, as in baby. E is usually a long sound, but when it's reduced, it just becomes shortened. Baby. Some examples of words that have a weak stress are annoy, annoy. Notice how quickly I said the sound annoy. I'm trying to get to noy as quickly as possible. It's a very low, fast, weak sound. Annoy. Calendar. Calendar. Ca-lin-der. Do you hear any weak stresses here? You should hear two. Ca, C-A, is a primary stress. Lin, L-A-N, is a weak stress. And so is D-A-R, der. Calendar, calendar. And also the word America. Do you hear any weak stresses here? There are three. America. Do you hear where the primary stress is? That's the M-E-R. Mer. But the other ones, the other vowels, are weak. America. It's not America. It's schwa, e, schwa, schwa. Those are the vowel sounds. America. Did you realize that before? America, America. This weak sound, this third stress, this is what throws a lot of people. This is what confuses a lot of people when they're learning English. You're not aware or not able to make this tiny little sound that dips way down in the language. You may be keeping your language at two tones, or you may be using a four-tone language that goes up and down a lot. But most likely, if you have a foreign accent and are not able to use an American accent, this is the one that you're missing, the schwa. So because this is such an important sound, we'll be spending a lot more time on this one. I'd also like to point out a fourth pitch. This isn't a pitch that we use in every sentence all the time, because this is a pitch that goes way up, and we use it to show some kind of emotion. It could be surprise, it could be excitement, it could even be anger. But it's much stronger and much higher. Listen to this. What? What? Notice how high that goes. You lost it? Really? You lost it? I can't believe it. No way. No way! Notice how high I get. That kind of pitch shows a lot of emotion. We'll be talking a lot more about that later in our course. Right now, just keep in mind that basically English is a three-tone language or a three-stress language. So that's all well and good when we talk about words. But there's also intonation in sentences. As I said, every major word has a primary stress. Every content word, nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs, all have a primary stress. We can also find secondary and weak stresses in these too. But most of the time, other words are reduced. Other words such as prepositions, articles, conjunctions, auxiliary verbs, and believe it or not, be verbs. Remember before I said action verbs are stressed. Be verbs such as is, was, were. Those simply connect two ideas together. They don't show any action. Therefore, they're not usually stressed. So most of these words are weakened. And because they're weakened, they sound really short and fast. Listen to these sentences. A dog ran to the man. A dog ran to the man. What are the words that you hear the most? Probably dog, ran, and man. The word a is spoken really quickly. To is also spoken quickly, and the is spoken quickly. Sometimes these are the words that you can't hear well because they're spoken so quickly. Listen again. A dog ran to the man. A dog ran to the man. The next sentence is, the children received some presents. The children received some presents. Children has a stress on the sound chilled. Received has the stress on sieved. And presents has the stress on pres. You're hearing three hills or three high points, three primary stresses in this sentence. And guess what? Everything else is reduced. The children receive some presents. The is reduced. Run on children is reduced. Ra, the R-E part of the received, is reduced or weak. Some is reduced. And S-E-N-T-S, zents, presence, is reduced. A lot of valleys, a lot of low and fast sounds in this sentence. The children receive some presents. The children receive some presents. So there's a definite difference between these main words or content words and all other parts of speech in English. There's also a slight difference in stress depending on which content word we're using. Normally, we want to know new information. That's why we stress it. We want to know who it is, where it is, what it is, and we also want to know what happened. That's why we hear nouns being a little more stressed than verbs. The noun describes who, what, or where. The verb describes the action. An adjective describes a noun. It tells us what the noun is like. And an adverb describes either a verb or sometimes an adjective. So usually nouns are the strongest, verbs are next, adjectives are next, and adverbs are next. So in the sentence, that's a cake, that's a cake, what can you hear stress the most? I can hear the noun, cake. But listen to the next sentence. That's a big cake, that's a big cake. Big is describing cake. Big has stress, but cake has more stress because that word is the strongest word in the sentence. But that doesn't mean we can't stress anything else in a sentence, because we can. but when we stress something that's not usual, not one of these content words, we get a different meaning, we get a different feeling. When we stress something, we point it out, we highlight it, or we contrast it against something else. So for example, I said, that's a big cake. You can hear cake has the strongest stress, the highest pitch. That's a big cake. But now listen to this. That's a big cake. That's a big cake. What did I stress? The word big. Why would I do that? Why didn't I follow the rule? Nouns should have more power than adjectives. Well, I want to point out, it's really big. That's a big cake. Wow, I can't believe how big it is. So I can stress big, but I'm going to point it out or highlight it. Big, big, big. In the next sentence, put it on the table. Put it on the table. What has the most stress? Table. Table. The T-A part of table. Put it on the table. That's a usual sentence. But what if I said, put it on the table? Come on, put it on the table. Why would I do that? I told you that usually we don't stress prepositions. On is a preposition. I want to emphasize on the table, not under the table, not beside the table, on the table. We also stress words when we contrast them against one another. For example, I would say, he likes chocolate ice cream. I would emphasize the word ice cream because ice cream is the noun, chocolate is the adjective, it describes ice cream. He likes chocolate ice cream. But now I want to contrast chocolate with vanilla. He likes chocolate ice cream, but she likes vanilla. What did I stress there? I stressed chocolate and vanilla because I'm contrasting them against one another. He likes chocolate ice cream, but she likes vanilla. So one more time. The words in sentences that have the most stress are content words. First nouns, then verbs, then adjectives, then adverbs. But we can stress anything in a sentence to highlight it, to emphasize it, or to contrast it against something else. These are your basic rules for intonation in American English. As we go on and we talk about things in more detail, it will become a lot clearer to you. But just this background will give you some idea of what's going on in English, and you can start opening your ears and really hearing it in the people around you. This is how they really speak. This is how I really speak. Notice I emphasized I. I do it. So don't worry, we're going to delve into each of these things a lot more, practice them a lot more until you feel very comfortable speaking in the same way. Understanding the theory and producing it are two different things. First, you gotta know. Then you gotta hear it in other people around you. And then you can start making it part of your speech. So now you know a little bit of the background. Start listening to other people, and soon we'll start putting it in to your speech. Another very big part of American English, or any English for that matter, is connecting the words together. As I said in the last lesson, we don't speak word by word. We connect everything together. So here's a little bit of background on how it works. When you see a word that ends with a consonant, and what I mean by that is a consonant sound. I'm not concerned about the spelling. If it ends with a consonant sound and the next word begins with a vowel sound, these words will connect together. One of the easiest ways to do it is to think of the last consonant on the first word, moving over to the first vowel on the second word. So you see each other. Let's push that ch sound over to the sound. And we get each other. Each other. Notice how they're connected together. I don't say each other. I say each other. Each other. Take care of each other. Each other. We also connect vowels with vowels. When we have two vowels together, there's generally a little connecting sound in the middle. As you go along and you start learning all of the vowel sounds, you'll realize that a lot of the vowel sounds are written with two letters. For example, when I write an O or the sound O, I use the symbol OW. And I do that for a reason. Because listen to these words. I don't say go away. I say go away. Go away. Do you hear anything interesting in there? Do you hear a little W between the go and away? There's a little tiny W connecting sound. Go away. Go away. And listen to this. I ate. Not I ate. I ate. I ate. Do you hear any connecting sound in there? I ate. I ate it. I ate. A little Y connecting sound is between those two words. I in American phonetics is written as A plus Y. This represents the sound I. We connect it with A and we get a little Y connecting sound. I ate. I ate. So when we connect vowels with vowels, there's either a W connecting sound or a Y connecting sound. And it depends on what the first letter is. Don't worry, we'll talk a lot more about it soon. We also connect consonants with consonants. Depending on your language background, this might be a little tricky. If your language uses consonant plus vowel plus consonant plus vowel, as many languages do, you may be tempted to add a little vowel sound when you connect consonants. You've got to be careful of that. The way to correctly connect consonants, it's kind of tough, but you make the first consonant sound before you open your mouth. Your mouth is already preparing to make the second consonant sound. So I don't say, give John, give. I opened my mouth and I made a little or schwa sound. I say give, and as my teeth are touching my bottom lip on that V, my tongue is already coming forward in my mouth to push off from the teeth to make the J sound. Give John. Give John. I didn't open my mouth before I got to the J. This takes a little time. This takes quite a bit of trial if you're not used to doing something like this, but you can do it. If we connect two words together that have the same consonant, we don't open the mouth. We just hold it a little bit longer. I don't say music course. I hold that k sound long enough to make two sounds, but I don't open the mouth in the meantime. Music course. Music course. Just hold the sound twice as long as you normally would. And if your second consonant or the second word starts with an L or an R, simply connect that consonant on the first word with the L or the R. So instead of saying I'd like, try I'd like. I'd like. I'd like. Instead of saying she's really, try she's really. She's really. She's really nice. We also have some special connections with the sounds t, d, s, and z when you connect them with a y. And I'm sure you've heard this before. You often hear people say not don't you, they say don't you, don't you. Where's that ch coming from? A t plus a y is often pronounced ch, like a ch. We don't say did you, we often say did you, did you. A D plus a Y often sounds like a J sound. And guess you becomes guess you, guess you. I guess you don't know, guess you. S plus a Y often sounds like sh, like an SH. And where's your, we connect the Z on the end of the where's, it sounds like a Z, with the Y, and we get where's your, where's your, where's your book, where's your. So it sounds like a zh, or we could write that as a zh, zh, as in pleasure. Where's your, where's your, where's your book. Now these are connections that you don't have to make, but a lot of people do that. Okay, let's talk about questions for just a moment. You may know this already, but you might not. Think about your native language. If you ask a question, does the sound go up or does the sound go down at the end of the sentence? In English, there are two different ways to do this. Often when I hear non-native English speakers ask a question, they'll just make the end go up. And that's okay half of the time, but not all of the time. If the question you ask is a yes-no question, the end of the sentence rises. For example, do you like it? Do you like it? Notice how the end of my sentence went up. Because the answer is, yes, I like it. No, I don't like it. It's a yes-no question. Is he here? Is he here? Yes, he's here. No, he's not here. Is he here? It's a yes-no question. Yes-no questions usually begin with do, did, is, was, were, and these questions go up. But WH questions, such as who, what, why, when, where, which, and how, go up, and then they drop back down again. So I don't say, where did she go? I say, where did she go? Notice it goes up and then it goes down again. Where is a WH question word? Where did she go? How was your class? How was your class? How was your class today? How was your class today? How was your class? It goes up and it drops back down. So yes-no questions go up, WH questions go up, and then they drop back down. What do you think? Did you know this? Those are two good questions right there. Okay, now let's talk about inflection for a minute. Just as we said, when you ask a question, a yes-no question goes up, a WH question goes up, and then it goes down. What about just a regular sentence? Listen to this one. There's a boy. There's a boy. In a normal sentence, the final content word goes up slightly, drops down a little bit. There's a boy. There's a boy. What happens if we add some non-content words at the end? Be very careful. You don't want your non-content words to go up and drop. They don't go up. They just drop. So in the first sentence, there's a boy. There's a boy in it. There's a boy in it. There's a boy in it. Notice that boy stays strong, but in it drops down. So the difference between the two sentences? There's a boy. There's a boy in it. The dropping down part happens to the structure words or the non-content words at the end. Boy is still a noun. It's still important. It needs to go up, but then it drops down. There's a boy. There's a boy in it. We also do this with phrasing. It goes up, it goes down. Listen to this. When he opened the door, he saw the basket. When he opened the door, he saw the basket. We've got two different phrases here. When he opened the door, that's one phrase, he saw the basket. That's the last phrase. Often phrases have commas, but not always. We sometimes phrase just to catch our breath, but we put phrases or pauses between thought groups, not between just any word, but between thought groups. When we pause, the last content word before the pause goes up slightly, comes down. When he opened the door, up slightly, and comes down. Pause. It's really easy when you see a comma because you know there's going to be a pause there. When he opened the door, he saw the basket. Basket. It goes up, it goes down, and it's a little bit higher than the rise that you got before the end of the pause. When he opened the door, he saw the basket. It's also possible to make the word before a pause go up slightly. When he opened the door, he saw the basket. It's a more conversational tone when the sound goes up. But there's a little bit of up and down before every pause. And when we list something, we definitely pause, and there is either an up or a slight up and down. So I could say, today I went to the store, the bank, and the post office. Post office goes up and goes down, but store, bank, go up. I could also say, today I went to the store, the bank, and the post office. A little rise and fall in both store and bank, but post office has a higher up and a lower down. Today I went to the store, the bank, and the post office. So this is just an overview for you. This is to give you a good idea of what kinds of things we'll be talking about. You'll have a lot of time for practicing this, but I really want you to start becoming aware of what's going on in English, because until now, most likely, you hear English in the same manner that you hear your own language. Even though people are doing these ups and these downs, you may not be recognizing it. I want to point it out so you'll start recognizing it. This is really important that you tune in to people around you and start hearing these pitches, these ups, these downs, the stresses. Don't worry if you can't understand it all right now. You'll get it. You'll get it as we go along. But tune in to life around you. You'll start picking it up little by little by little. And that's exactly what you need to do, is start picking it up little by little. So thanks for being with me here today. In our next two lessons, we're going to start breaking English down into small pieces so you can see how things are in small, tiny sound groups. And then we'll start building it back up again so you can get the whole language together. I think you're going to do a great job. But don't give up. Let's get going. Bye for now, and I'll talk to you again soon.